Okay! Tokyo! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Go with a brand new broadcast week beginning this 23rd day, of January 2017. This is the Horn, headonradionetwork.com is where we live, and well, that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room where we'll be having a rollicking good time this evening. Already there and waiting for you to jump in and participate and be part of the Madcap Mary multimedia extravaganza zaniness are Don from Central PA, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Steve from Georgistan, VT Blom, and more to come. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, and now that winter is, you know, over, I guess, in Northern California, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes. Everybody's there, just waiting for you. All you got to do is pick out a screen name and a password, and you'll be in amongst the merriment. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast operation, and probably one of the cheapest in the country. We try to raise $200 every evening to keep things afloat. And tonight is no different. We try to raise those $200, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or 64 at $3.13. And we round up that extra half a penny from 12.5 to 13, and we take all that extra and we put it against new rims for the Maybach. Yes, absolutely. Now, what is this throw the third switch business? We're sending, everything's going, and there shouldn't be any problems. Anybody out there? Okay. Anybody out there getting the broadcast? Please? I don't want to start the week this way. Okay, thank you, Jug of Punch. Streaming here. Okay, good, 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 good. Because that's just too much damn drama. Well, I know what most... I haven't listened or anything, but I'm guessing... Oh, by the way, yeah. If you want to help keep the program going, go to the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. It's easy. We love new subscribers. We need new subscribers. One of these days, we're going to have 400 at $10 a month, and that will dramatically reduce the time I spend on this stuff. But if you'd like to, just check that box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, Mr. Soros. I mean, really, George, you can shake out the sofa and keep the Horn on the air for a year. But for the rest of us, you know, $10, whatever. It's much appreciated. And a little bit at a time, I send out a few more Horn bumper stickers to new subscribers. If you haven't gotten yours yet, do not lose faith. You will. It's just a very small operation here. But anyway, if you don't like that, you can always use the U.S. Postal Service, the USPS. And they will happily deliver your checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Okie dokie, okie dokie. Let's see. Like I said, I have an idea where I want. I'd like the program to go this evening, or at least where we'll start. Who knows where we'll end up? That's largely up to you. Thank you, Robert. Loud and clear in Oz. Good. We'll start and just see where it goes. Thank you, Les. Loud and clear on TuneIn. Much appreciated. And let's see. Where I had in mind to go is something let's start this way. We're going to have a hard time over the next few years just keeping up. Arnold says, by the way, I love my Horn bumper sticker. Good. I hope it's seen all over the neighborhood there, Arnold. Glad to have you on board. Thank you to Steve in New York for getting us started this evening. Thank you very kindly. We're going to have a hard time keeping up in the coming months and years, because there's going to be this heady mix of outright lying and predatory behavior. The dismantling has begun, as noted last week. All references to LGBTQ rights have been disappeared from the White House webpage. References to climate change. Well, the best way to stop climate change is to stop talking about climate change. So there's no reference to it. And over the weekend, I noticed something else. The Spanish language version of the White House webpage is gone. Now, I don't know. Maybe they put it back. Maybe it was just down for maintenance. Maybe there was an N that needed one of those little squiggly things above it, and they were just correcting mistakes. Maybe it's back. I don't know. But it was gone. The National Park Service got muzzled, you know, for talking about his crowd size. And that got a lot of people going. But with this kind of fascist behavior, and it is fascist behavior, I'm not using fascist in the sense of I call everybody I don't like a fascist, you know. Wait a minute. I asked for 6 creams in my McDonald's coffee and I only got 4, you fascist! No. Fascist is a real, historical, definable term, and it suits and fits the administration of Donald J. Trump, billionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and had the Russians buy him the White House, to a T. But we're going to have a hard time keeping up. And so I look here and there for news stories that may not necessarily be getting. Sometimes I'm going to fall into the same rut as everybody else. Jesus Christ, what a liar Sean Spicer is. And, oh, my God, did you see fascism, Barbie? I'm as guilty of that as anybody. But there are stories out there that beg coverage that might not otherwise get it. And one of those... And it simply flummoxes me because of the potential import of what we're talking about. According to the Associated Press, and I even went so far as to double check to make sure that it was not like, you know, a fake Associated Press parody account or anything. No. It was the real Associated Press. And they reported today, just for the sake of accuracy, let me just get to their exact words, because, you know, words mean things. At 12:18 p.m. Eastern Standard Time today, the Associated Press reported... Oh, did I do the hi? I'm Bob Kincaid. Well, we figured that out by now, haven't we? Good. At 12:18 p.m. today, Eastern Standard Time, the real Associated Press, no kidding, tweeted, all caps... Breaking, Russian Defense Ministry says its warplanes have flown first combat mission in Syria with U.S.-led coalition aircraft. You got that? Yeah. We're flying combat missions with the goddamn Russians in support of Assad. You know... The butcher. You know, more war. This has got to be terribly embarrassing for the Purity Brigade, who constantly beat a drum prior to November 8th, 2016. God damn Hillary, that war criminal, bloodthirsty monstrosity! Oh, Jesus! She's gonna go to war immediately with Russia and we'll be plunged into World War III! Oh, Hillary! Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that Putin's puppy has put the okay on making the United States military an auxiliary adjunct of the Russians. Yes. My goodness gracious. Doesn't it make you feel all warm and fuzzy and patriotic? No, me neither. Now, the question is, can we, on the heels of what was a very profoundly important, I mean, largest single protest in the history of the entire United States, day on Saturday, can we keep that momentum going? And can we keep... Oh, right. Don from Central PA. Hey, Bob, it's just like World War II. We're friends with the Russians again. I added that we're friends with the Russians again part. Only it's not just like World War II. It would be just like World War II if in World War II the Russians and the United States started... bombing, you know, what was then Czechoslovakia in support of the Nazis. Then it would be just like World War II. So here's a question. Then, you know, if this doesn't fit with the theme of Moran Monday, I don't know what does. Do we have an anti-war movement left in the United States? I honestly don't know. There's a lot of you out there who listen to a whole bunch of other progressive radio. How many of them began their programs talking about the fact that the United States military has been co-opted by the Russian military, at least according to the Russian Ministry of Defense, and are flying joint missions between the Russian Air Force and the U.S.-led coalition aircraft? Any? Bueller? Meanwhile, Steve tells me that the Pentagon has flatly denied a Russian government claim that both nations' warplanes conducted a joint combat mission in Syria. The article that Steve sent along said, and it's from The Guardian, on Monday, the Russian Defense Ministry claimed to have received coordinates of Islamic State positions via a U.S.-Russian communications channel, and that two jets from the U.S.-led coalition participated in a strike alongside Russian aircraft. But the Pentagon, now helmed by Trump's appointee James Mattis, issued a round denial of the Russian account.
The Department of Defense is not coordinating airstrikes with the Russian military in Syria, said spokesman Eric Pahan, who added that he was not aware of any coalition member aiding Russia in this instance.
So I guess the Associated Press just like, I don't know, is Sean Spicer going to have another hissy about this? He's got to pace himself. 4 years is a long time to try to advance fascism in the United States. So, who do you believe? I mean, I know who the Purity Brigade believes. They believe Trump and his administration. But for me, I don't know. I honestly don't know. And even if this turns out to be of dubious provenance, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, what motive would the AP have in reporting what the Russian Defense Ministry says? It might be good on the heels of that dramatic expression of freedom and determination that took place on Saturday in Washington, D.C., in New York, in Chicago, in Denver, in L.A., in San Francisco, where they turned City Hall pink. It was a beautiful photograph. It might be good to build on that energy by getting ready to crank up the anti-war movement again. Because I have a feeling, and maybe I'm just being paranoid, no, we're going to need an anti-war movement. And maybe keep our eyes open for the occasional fib coming out of the Defense Department. As Steve pointing out in New York, But the Department of Defense did say they're open to cooperating with the Russians, so, you know, stay tuned. AP reports Russian Ministry of Defense says they're cooperating with the U.S. is cooperating with them, and the Pentagon says, nuh-uh! And I guess we're, boom, into the world of alternate facts. Alternative facts. And surely to goodness, we all know about the alternative facts. Mike in Cascadia sends a photo of Bellingham, Washington. The streets fairly overflowing with protesters marching on Saturday. And even here in itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy, little tiny West by Trump, Virginia, the Trumpiest place in the whole United States of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever in the universe, amen, under God. Here in little old Trumpy, West Virginia. Even here, in the state capital, Charleston, nearly 3,000 people marched to the Capitol in defense of the rights of women, and in protest of the idea that we should have someone in the White House who admits to committing sexual assaults and openly uses vulgar terms to describe women that he has decided have somehow are worthy of his disdain. Courtesy of Gerald, God remarked, I think, on Twitter, people that still wave the Confederate flag are not allowed to say, you lost, get over it. Ta-da! Meanwhile, from Ron in the far and sort of partially frozen north, alternative fact number one for today, Betty White did Shakespeare when she was younger. He was so impressed that he went on to write plays. Ooh, cold. Alternative fact number two, Betty White invented the kerosene-powered vibrator in 1886. You're going to hell, Ron. I'm just saying. And I have a feeling you'll have a damned fine time there. You might even run into the shade of old Reverend Elijah Craig. Meanwhile, real news from far Canada. Trudeau's cabinet is meeting in retreat in Alberta this week to prepare for meeting Trump. It's going to be a critical relationship that needs to be maintained. Guess who's traveling to Calgary tomorrow to meet with the cabinet to give advice to how they should proceed? No, not Henry Kissinger. He's old news. Jared Kushner will get us through this potential rough patch. You betcha. I'm waiting for the announcement of a new Trump property going up in Calgary. Mm-hmm. A note coming from Vince. Um, should probably be saved for tomorrow, but he notes a guy on Tom Hartman's show referred to the Titanic storms in Georgia et al. It wasn't Bob Ney. Somebody was filling in for him on that daily segment. We're getting around. Nah, we don't own the word Titanic. We're not Trumpy. You know, he owns words like huge and fantastic and tremendous and unbelievable and incredible. Queries going on in the chat room. Trey in Kentucky Stan just wandered in, and Don from Central PA asked him, have all the coal jobs come back over the weekend? And Trey said, good, I was wanting to get black lung. Yeah. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, like we believe the U.S. military. Why, we never drone wedding parties in hospitals and shoot down civilian aircraft or innocent kids. We the goddamn U.S. of A, and we don't do that kind of shit. You know, except when we do. But Hillary! Right. David in South Carolina. Subject line, unicorns. None of the DNC candidates are acceptable, since none will admit that Hillary Clinton stole the primary with the DNC's help. Also, Ashley Judd is now despised after having something positive to say about Hillary Clinton. Yeah, and Ashley Judd was probably, she probably, I don't know, maybe some people prefer, Madonna launching F-bombs, but Ashley Judd's, reading or recitation, I should say, performance of a poem written by a young woman from Tennessee was pure fire and mighty powerful. But the word Hillary did appear in it. And that immediately garnered the ire of the Purity Brigade. Well, exactly. Ron points out, we only kill the people who need killing. Oh, and as Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, points out, there has been a shift in the American political cultural landscape. She says, here's some good news. Signing executive orders no longer makes you a tyrannical dictator. Well, you know, it's only if you sign executive orders and you're wrong-colored, Carol, that that an executive order is an act of a tyrannical dictator. I mean, signing an executive order that begins to lay the groundwork for murdering about 40,000 people a year, that's freedom. That's making America great. That's winning. Yeah. John points out under the subject line, jobs, jobs, jobs. Wait, that was Jim Justice's campaign slogan. Trump said at his swearing in that his focus is on America first, jobs. What better job creation than war? Mighty good for business. That's for sure. A note coming in from Scott and Punky. Two things. Latest Trump outrage and what he's up to. Trump's latest outrage, crowd size, claiming his is bigger. I'm not a psychiatrist, but given his many previous outbursts, many over meaningless or trivial matters, he really seems stuck in the rapidly spinning hamster wheel of his id. For anyone unfamiliar with the term id, it's defined as the unorganized part of the personality structure that contains a human's basic instinctual drives. It is the only component of personality that is present from birth. It is the source of our bodily needs, wants, desires, and impulses, particularly our sexual and aggressive drives. The id contains the libido, which is the primary source of instinctual force that is unresponsive to the demands of reality. Combine Richard Nixon's madman approach with a magician's simple technique of misdirection, and you get the key to understanding Donald Trump's operating methodology. When dealing with North Vietnam, Nixon always tried to leave them thinking, who knows what this crazy bastard will do next? In stage magic, if the magician will be pulling the rabbit out of the hat with his left hand, you can be sure that he'll try to distract you with some kind of impressive flourish with his right. With Trump, this combination seems to be showing up in the form of his seemingly endless barrage of outrageous tweets or with inflammatory statements by his spokespeople. These are designed to divert your attention from the negative and nefarious stuff that he's actually up to, and it's not helping that social media and news media alike get taken in by it every time. Signed, Scott, in soggy San Diego, and his faithful feathered pal, Punky the Political Cockatiel. I added the political part. Yeah. And then, well, then there's this. John Fox drew my attention to it. There is some, I mean, there's stupid, and then there's mendacious, and oh, Jesus. This is a, sure enough, propaganda film in support of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. And just, well, John said, you gotta run with this. And, yeah, he's right.
Senator Jeff Sessions, a lifetime of fighting for justice, a former state attorney general and U.S. attorney, Sessions is a civil rights champion who worked to desegregate Alabama schools and fight for equality. In the Senate, he's reached across the aisle to help sponsor bipartisan criminal justice reform. Now, Sessions has been nominated as Attorney General, where he'll put public safety first. Tell your senator it's time for real reform. Confirm Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, he fought to desegregate schools, only, well, he didn't. That was just done, he signed his name to it. That was it. That's a campaign ad. Only he's not campaigning for anything. Who is it that, what Democrat are they trying to pressure into going all Quisling and voting for him? Oof. Every word of that PR piece is a goddamn lie.
Well, he pursued the death penalty for a Klan member.
Okay. The guy had committed a murder and had been sentenced to death by a judge and jury. Making sure he gets killed as Attorney General, it really doesn't, it isn't, it's not an accomplishment. You might be kind of interested, going back to Ashley Judd for a minute, you might be kind of interested to know that her big sister, Winona, Winona is upset. About Ashley's reading a poem. The poem was written by a 19-year-old young woman from Franklin, Tennessee, named Nina Donovan. It's called Nasty Woman. And one owner said the whole thing is toxic. You want to hear the toxic? Maybe you've already heard it. I could stand to hear it again. Because I got to, you know, the thing with poetry and performance art, art in general, is that we tend to give it meaning that it doesn't necessarily have independently of our own experiencing of art. This is a key component of why it's art. And so when I heard the cadences and the words in the Nasty Woman poem as Ashley Judd delivered it, well, first of all, I was reminded that she has been absolutely fearless in standing up to the thugs of the coal industry, blowing the living bejesus out of her native eastern Kentucky. The Kentucky Coal Association so despised her that they at one of their conclaves or whatever it is they have, they put up a big life-size naked poster of Ashley Judd and mocked it and demeaned it and spat on it and derided it. Because she had displayed the courage to stand up against them and point out that they are poisoners, destroyers, and killers. So having already been through that, when I first heard Ashley Judd's performance, saw it, I was reminded of that. And in the linguistic cadences, again, and dialect and accent, I heard the echo of generations that went before her. Because all the women in Appalachia are not meek, subservient, racist, bigoted, homophobic, transphobic, xenophobic morons. The only reason, in many instances, that there is a ninth generation, or an eighth generation, or a seventh generation, or a sixth generation of Appalachians is because of the unutterably strong Appalachian women who went before. The women who raised families after Daddy got killed in the mines. After Daddy got crippled in the mines. After Daddy got gassed or burnt or blown up or buried in the mines. And few of us can even begin to consider, to even ponder, the disastrous difficulty of the circumstances under which they raised those families. It was, I think, 1907 when the mine at Monongah blew up and immediately widowed or orphaned 400 or 500 women and maybe as many or more children. It's long about Christmas time, and when the coal company finally knuckled under and decided to give the surviving women $100 or so apiece, the coal executive declared, "Well, that ought to make them a pretty nice Christmas." Uh-huh. Never mind the fact that those women were going to have to get through the rest of their lives on that couple of hundred bucks. That they were going to house, clothe, feed entire families on that couple of hundred bucks. And many of those women in that particular case being recent immigrants to the United States from Italy who were cast adrift in an alien culture. Many of whom wanted nothing to do with them. And it was those same tough Appalachian women who kept families going, who kept children fed, who kept houses livable, even when daddy didn't get blowed up in the mines, or buried, or maimed. But instead, came out of the mines, went from the bath, and went from the bathhouse to the pool hall. And maybe just, you know, drank up the payday. It's only a stereotype because it was very, very real. So those are the things that I was thinking about. Those were the personal recollections that I imposed upon my appreciation of what Ashley Judd said on Saturday. And because I appreciate it, I'm going to replay it for your and my appreciation.
A voting booth, I'm nasty like the battles my grandmothers fought to get me into that voting booth. I'm nasty.
President Trump, I did not vote for you. That.
Yeah, well, that was the wrong clip. Let's see if we can find a better one. Yeah, this might be better. Damn. Gets a little frustrating sometimes. Here we go.
Ashley!
My name is Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd is here!
And I am a feminist. And I want to say hello to Independence Avenue in the back. All the way down to 17th Street.
Wow!
And I bring you words from Nina Donovan, a 19-year-old in Middle Tennessee, and she has given me the privilege of telling you what she has to say. I am a nasty woman. I'm not as nasty as a man who looks like he bathes in Cheeto dust. A man whose words are a diss track to America. Electoral college sanctioned hate speech contaminating this national anthem. I'm not as nasty as Confederate flags being tattooed across my city. Maybe the South actually is gonna rise again. Maybe for some, it never really fell. Blacks are still in shackles and graves. just for being black. Slavery has been reinterpreted as the prison system in front of people who see melanin as animal skin. I am not as nasty as a swastika painted on a pride flag. And I didn't know devils could be resurrected, but I feel Hitler in these streets. A mustache traded for a toupee. Nazis renamed the cabinet electroconversion therapy, the new gas chamber, shaming the gay out of America, turning rainbows into suicide notes. I am not as nasty as racism, fraud, conflict of interest, homophobia, sexual assault, transphobia, white supremacy, misogyny, ignorance, white privilege. Daughter being your favorite sex symbol. Like your wet dreams infused with your own genes. But yeah, I'm a nasty woman. A loud, vulgar, proud woman. I'm not nasty like the combo of Trump and Pence being served up to me in my voting booth. I'm nasty like the battles my grandmothers fought to get me into that voting booth. I'm nasty like the fight for wage equality. Scarlett Johansson, why were the female actors paid less than half of what the male actors earned last year? See, even when we do go into higher paying jobs, our wages are still cut with blades sharpened by testosterone. Why is the work of a black woman and a Hispanic woman worth only 63 and 54 cents of a white man's privileged daughter? This is not a feminist myth. This is inequality. So we are not here to be debunked. We are here to be respected. We are here to be nasty. I'm nasty like my blood stains on my bed sheets. We don't actually choose if and when to have our periods. Believe me, if we could, some of us would. We don't like throwing away our favorite pairs of underpants. Tell me, why are pads and Tampax still taxed? Ooh, that was a brand name. Why are tampons and pads still taxed when Viagra and Rogaine are not? Is your erection really more than protecting the sacred, messy part of my womanhood? Is the blood stain on my jeans more embarrassing than the thinning of your hair? I know it is hard to look at your own entitlement and privilege. You may be afraid of the truth. I am unafraid to be honest. It may sound petty, bringing up a few extra cents. It adds up to the pile of change I have yet to see in my country. I can't see. My eyes are too busy praying to my feet, hoping you don't mistake eye contact for wanting physical contact half my life. I have been zipping up my smile, hoping you don't think I want to unzip your jeans. I am unafraid to be nasty because I am nasty like Susan, Elizabeth, Eleanor, Amelia, Rosa, Gloria, Condoleezza, Sonia, Malala, Michelle, Hillary.
Hillary? Oh, Jesus God, she wanted to start World War III with Russia. Oh, what about the Goldman Sachs speeches? Son of a bitch. Oh, Hillary. She's the devil.
Yeah. But there's no getting around the fact that that was the absolute most powerful at least of what I said. No, the most powerful part of the whole thing is that is that more people came out to protest the ill treatment of women and especially at the hands of Republicans and God knows Donald J. Trump than have ever come out for anything. The draft riots of New York in 1864. The anti-Vietnam War protests. Even the marches against the Iraq War paled by comparison. Something has started. Now, the question with these is always, and I'm not a naysayer, and I'm not trying to pour cold water on it, but the issue with all of these things is always what happens next. And if there's not something built upon this, then it goes away, as Rutger Hauer noted in Blade Runner, like tears in rain. But one senses that something has been triggered. Why else would people in London, in Paris, in Sydney, in Kenya, take to the streets in solidarity with people in the streets in the United States? Much of the world understands, by the way, were women allowed to march in Moscow? Was there a Moscow march? I'm asking that sincerely, not sarcastically. Because I don't know. But Lord God, it sure got under the skin of the Play-Doh Cheeto. I mean, he was scheduled to go over to the CIA. And he did, and he delivered remarks in front of that wall of stars that have no names by them, of just CIA, and each star represents a CIA operative who's been killed in, arguably, the service of this country. Kind of put an asterisk up there because of the dubious nature of a lot of CIA action. I mean, CIA agents who died, like, at the Bay of Pigs. But anyway, to CIA people, that wall is hallowed ground. Those stars mean something and someone. They just can't say who the names are, even today. And for this petty egomaniac, or perhaps to bootstrap what Scott and Punky were talking about, this idiot, to stand there and deliver a diatribe against the media and complain about how big it was or how small it was or how big it wasn't is quite possibly the pettiest thing that this country has ever seen. And then to send out Sean Spicer to read a diatribe that used vocabulary that made it pretty plain that some of the language was written, you know, in brown crayon by the idiot himself is shocking and embarrassing. Asa pointing out, man, that 19-year-old Tennessean took a slugger and bloodied their faces with it real nice. Yeah, she did. And I hope she's safe. Because the Trumpansies, their fascist allies are not afraid to resort to violence. The very thing happened in Seattle. The University of Washington was the location of the last of the dangerous faggot tour of Milo Yiannopoulos, the vicious little Nazi who has made a career out of vilifying and attacking people who, you know, aren't Nazis. And so anti-fascist protesters, blocked the entrance to the theater and kept a whole bunch of nasty alt-whitists, neo-Nazis, or their sympathizers, from getting in. And eventually, one of the fascists drew a weapon and shot a peaceful anti-fascist protester. There was so much noise, many people didn't even know a shot had been fired. But the victim was rushed to the hospital where he underwent surgery. And has been upgraded from critical to serious condition. Meanwhile, the fascist who did the shooting turned himself in at the police station, said, "Well, I was defending myself." And so the police just, let him go. Because when fascists shoot people, it's apparently okay. Even though the person he shot was not in any wise threatening the guy with the gun. This is another one of those little signposts on the road to full-on fascism. Oh, and by the way, I neglected to mention, but Ron in the somewhat frozen north reminds me, when he went over to the CIA, Trump, again, as he did with his press conference, you know, the one with the fake file folders, he brought his own cheering section with him. Because it's an understood that in front of that wall of stars, you don't put up a bunch of hoopla. But the rules don't apply to the idiot in chief. And so they hooped and hollered for him there in the CIA building as if it was Saturday night wrestling down to the armory. And Trump claimed that there were hundreds more who couldn't get in but wanted to. This, of course, was also proven to be another of those alternative facts. You know, things that aren't true. Like I said, we're going to be busy. Well, there's the answer, courtesy of Sparky. They did at least register a women's march in Moscow. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Sparky. Mike says of Ashley Judd's reading, that is so touching. It's bringing a tear to my eyes. Mike adds, when I had a satellite in my vehicle and listened to Joe Madison, he would define the difference between a moment and a movement. And so it is that Joe Madison tweeted, a moment does not make a movement. It requires sacrifice. If you don't speak up, it is a disservice to the founders of your organization. Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, writes in and says, T is promising a 15 to 20% corporate tax rate, since that 35% rate is just too heavy to handle. No word yet on how to get T and his higher-placed cohorts to even begin to pay any personal income tax. Also, look for an up to 75% slash in regulations, evidently for companies keeping jobs in the U.S. Whatever that can possibly mean, considering that it is hard to quantify just how many regulations are actually left. So get ready for the latest round of crisis mode rhetoric that will start up in earnest for destroying, privatizing Social Security and Medicare. Baby boomer generation is nearing peak year birth demographic. So this is the administration to do the heavy work of gutting everything before the early and full retirement range kicks in. Sorry for the dull statistics, but we live by the god of percentages. All being a smokescreen for what the tea machine is banking on, y'all forgetting. Of course, the Supreme Court Chief Justice, next on the greatest hits list. Multi-generational fascism, you bet. As for the women's marches, lovely, inspiring. But if you want to organize, go anywhere and turn into something more than empty symbolism. Ditch the pink pussy hats. New color is blood red. Regards, Steve, in China. Careful now, says Matt in San Francisco. Come on now, Bob. Just the mention of Milo's name makes me want to fling my smartphone at the closest living thing. I'm not sure if my insurance covers that. Insurance? You've got insurance? Oh, wait, that'd probably be like car insurance, right? I understand. Milo Yiannopoulos is repulsive by any measure. And to anyone who is engaged in the struggle for LGBTQQQ rights, he must be doubly, trebly, or quadruply so. How could it be otherwise? So, lo and behold, there's the filibobster. Heather says, Ashley Judd gave me goosebumps. I love this. And John reminds us that several states are pushing laws declaring that protests can be classified as economic terrorism. And one of the things we're going to deal with along the way is the question of whether or not we still have a functioning judiciary. There was rather a big deal in Washington today. I mean, it's hard to just try to organize all of this stuff and keep track of the... One, if you want to call the White House now and leave a comment, don't. Because that's gone too. They don't want to hear from you because they know that the majority of America despises them and the very air that they breathe. So, sorry, no White House comment line. Economic terrorism is protest? Well, look, that kind of... I know a lot of people don't think this way, but consider what Taft-Hartley did to the National Labor Relations Act. You know, in France, the lawyers go on strike when the garbage collectors go on strike, when the pilots go on strike because the grocery workers went on strike. And it is a means by which, say, in France, the working class retains some measure, some modicum of dignity. That can't happen in the United States. I have deep respect for the people who want general strikes. I support them, but I also recognize the unlikelihood of them happening. But to a certain extent, when protests get as large as the ones in D.C. and L.A. and Chicago, San Francisco, Atlanta, Birmingham, Mobile, Charlotte, New York, traffic comes to a standstill. And that has an economic impact. It's supposed to. It's not a party. Now, granted, there was not a single arrest in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. Oh, there were some arrests on Friday when the little black block types, destroyed some poor guy's limo that he uses to try to make a living. Sure. But for the march itself on Saturday, nope, well behaved. And that was inspiring. But it did run the transit system to absolute capacity and more. And it did put a strain on traffic in a city that doesn't handle it very well in the first place. But for people selling, food and umbrellas and so forth, it was probably an economic positive. But what they're talking about when they say economic terrorism, they mean things like stopping pipelines. And by terrorism, what they mean is scaring oil executives and gas executives into thinking that there's going to be a little less stuff in the U-Haul that they eventually will put behind the hearse that carries the body of the executive after a long, long and wealthy life to his or her long home. Mm-hmm. Ron in Raleigh says, maybe the Cuyahoga River will catch fire again. Don't need no job-killing regulations. Subject line WTF from Matt in San Francisco. So when we protest, we're economic terrorists, but the bigots are forgiven for their economic anxiety? I can't. Watch out for that flying phone, lady. I know. Oh, and by the way, did you catch that? The number one excuse for why the numbers were so tiny at the inauguration? Yeah, the Trumpanzees said, well, we just couldn't come because we all had jobs, not like you libtards. Which is more than a little bit ironic, because they voted for Trump because none of them have jobs, because they've all got a bad case of the economic anxiety that makes them go and spray paint swastikas on churches. One or the other, boys.
Can't have them both. Ron, other Ron, up in Canada, says, I have a theory that the plan being put in place by the Trump administration is to throw out the verbal grenades from day one, day after day after day. We'll get some stupid shit. The net results being a populace that can no longer make the distinction between what is merely outrageous and what is really fucking important. But every time one of these squirrel events happens, the media will keep putting out the adrenaline that keeps hitting the public circulatory system. Adrenaline can only work for so long before it becomes harder to get excited. That's when we'll get some idea of the replacement for the ACA, but most important, the nominations of the next Supreme Court justice. These two actions will have impacts on hundreds of thousands of people every year for decades, period. Oh, and by the way, in case you missed it, and I did, Carol Baker points out, Kim Jong-Trump declared his inauguration day a National Day of Patriotic Devotion. Carol says, I missed it. Too busy plotting the resistance. And distilling a point to its essence, Arnold points out, so this mother has a 32% approval rating, no phone line, but thinks he has a mandate. Got it. They care about mandates, they care about power and using it. And I don't know if you noticed today, but Susan Collins and Dr. Cassidy of Louisiana introduced their replace part of repeal and replace in the Senate. Yeah, it's a big old bowl of hoodoo, voodoo, stoodoo. And no, it ain't going to be better. And no, everybody ain't going to be covered. There's only one way to cover the entire country. Not one and a half, not two. There's not a better free market solution than the Affordable Care Act, because the Affordable Care Act was the perfect free market solution. That's why the people who came up with it were the Heritage Foundation. It was designed to be a mighty river of money flowing into the for-profit insurance industry. And it has functioned well as that. The only solution, the only way to provide coverage for every American, and you know this better than I, or as well, at least, is universal single-payer health care. Medicare for all. This block grant bullshit that they're peddling with regard to Medicaid will destroy the concept of Medicaid and will result of more than just the 40,000 people dying who are going to die under the repeal. Who, incidentally, might be any one of us? Or several. And by the way, that number's real. We talked about it some the other night. Tried to figure out what taking $18 million people off of health insurance would, how many of those people would wind up dead? Well, it's about somewhere between 36 and 40,000 people a year. So over a 10-year period, about
400,000 people. Numbers like that have a hard time registering the human mind. But they have no problem whatsoever registering in a human family. And odds are, based on another little piece of information, a bunch of those 40,000 dead folks every year are going to be white people. You know, the ones with all the economic anxiety, who voted against Hillary. Oh my God, she's a devil. Because they were terrified that it was just going to be four more years of the same terrible Obama policies. You know, the Obama policies that actually brought Mr. and Mrs. Cletus J. Bucktooth health insurance for the first time in their sad and sorry lives. But they ran. They didn't walk. They ran to the polls to vote for Trump. And he is now going to reward them richly. Oh, they're going to be winning so much no health insurance that they're going to get sick and die of winning so much no health insurance. Yeah. 17 past the hour. We still have $190 to raise on the evening. Things have been a little bit slow. But hopefully that will pick up. Let's run over and... Now, how did that happen? There we go. That's better. Let's run over and... is that you, Tracy? Area code 818. You're on the air.
Hi.
There you are.
Wow.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. I got you now.
Okay.
Wrong button.
I was talking... Oh. Well, Bob, it kind of helped, you know, I think with everything that's been going on, your buttons have been pushed all day, so it's okay, you know, if you missed a button or two. It's been bad. I actually have the highlight of my weekend. I finally saw Hidden Figures.
Did you?
Yes.
I've heard nothing but great stuff about it.
And here, I was the only Negro in the entire theater.
You didn't go to the wrong theater, did you?
Well, I live in the Valley. It's kind of hard to be in the, you know, more than two or three of us in, you know, at one place together at the same time. So it's, it actually made me feel good to see, because the movie was, we went to dinner and we didn't buy our tickets before I left. And that's typically what I do. But I was running around Saturday and all that, so I forgot to buy the tickets. When we got to the theater, it was nearly sold out. And we had to sit in, like, you know, the second row from the front. But that was okay because the theater has been newly remodeled and it had those. Have you been to the theaters with the reclining seats yet? Or do you guys have those there?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, they're not bad.
Oh, man. Don't let the movie be boring. Don't let there be a lull. There's been a couple of times that I have fallen asleep in the theater.
No, I know what you mean. I mean, you just get, yeah. They came in handy back when Avatar came around in 3D, and the little sparkly things were flying in front of my face, and you could recline a little bit, and maybe get away from them. hadn't had anything like that since I got hold of the bad acid in college.
Something I have never done. Seriously. I've always been terrified of drugs because of my family's history. And besides, and mostly because I was terrified of my mother, what she would do if I ever did anything like that. So my mom was a damn good deterrent for me not to, you know, to just say no, thank you, you know, war on fucking drugs, mass incarceration. Oh, prison pipe, please go to prison pipeline. I'm sorry, I went on a tangent.
Happens.
So I'm watching Hidden Figures, right? And have you seen it yet? No, you haven't, because you just said after another.
No, I haven't. I've only heard. I mean,
well,
the nearest movie theater to here is a 60-mile round trip.
What? I see. It's things like this that I just. I mean, because I was listening. Did you see that post of the young lady from Detroit who drove all the way? They, you know, made that trip from Detroit to Washington D.C. to hear Betsy DeVos talk about bullshit. So she's like, "Well, now it's my turn for you to listen. I spent 7 hours listening to you. Now it's your turn to listen to me." And she was talking about the inequalities in Detroit about 4,000 kids or 5,000 kids, and the school is only one high school in the black neighborhoods, but as opposed to like 2,000 kids in like 10 high schools in the suburban neighborhood. And, you know, contrary to popular belief, our schools aren't bad because we're not poor. We're just the wrong color.
Yeah, I think the politically neutral term is underserved.
Okay. Urban youth and you know, and whatnot, and, you know, cold work for black. And I'm just, like, in his pageant acceptance speech, because that's what I'm going to call the election from now on, when he was talking about, you know, beating up on crime and, you know, cities like Detroit. And I'm like, why is it that, that all the ills of this country is because, you know, black people? I thought it was just the Mexicans and the Muslims.
Oh, no. The trouble started with the natives. And then they and then they tried to allay their native problem, who really did refuse to be enslaved, by, you know, enslaving people from Africa and bringing them over here to, you know, do the work, and it's all y'all's fault.
Well, you know, I take full responsibility. I know it's our fault. I and I'm sorry, you know, white people. I think I talked about this when I was doing homework the other day, and I was reading about the poor, aggrieved white people after this had been a few years since the Civil War and the end of Reconstruction. And, you know, at that point where there could have been coalitions built, and, you know, because the same poor white folks were pretty much in the same position as the poor black folks. But, you know,
that's how once they invented racism, that's how racism worked, because you could say, yeah, I mean, you're poor, but at least you're white.
Right.
Damn straight.
Mm-hmm. Right. At least you're white.
Oh, and by the way, talking about underprivileged and underserved, Earther reminds me of something. Let's play a little game, Tracy. It's called Do You Remember Who Said It?
Dun, dun, dun.
Many of these people were
play.
Many of these people were underprivileged to begin with, so this is turning out quite well for them.
Would that be? See, there's just so many to choose from, Bob. I don't know. Would that be Jefferson Davis, Beauregard Sessions?
No. Yeah. Okay. You want me to narrow it down by gender?
Okay. Okay.
I'll give you a gender hint. Not a guy.
Would that be the current nominee or whatever for the secretary the Department of Education?
No. No, you're going to have to reach back.
Jesus.
No, you're going to have to reach back in time. See, the point here of Earther posting that is the fact that some of what we're seeing ain't exactly new.
No, it isn't. It isn't. And so, you know, I'm not an astute of history.
Do we need another hint?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to make this as fun as possible, given the crummy subject matter. Okay, so we did a gender hint.
Can I get a decade?
Now I'll go you one better. I'll give you the year.
Okay.
Because I'm just that kind of guy.
Okay, I think I know who it is, but give me the year.
2005. Now you didn't cheat and use the interweb tubes, did you?
No, because 2005. Oh, shit. I know who it is, so you're just going to have to tell me. So I can scream.
When poor people who had just survived Hurricane Katrina were evacuated to live on cots in the Houston Astrodome, former First Lady Barbara Bush, love child of the Quaker Oats Man, said many of these people were underprivileged to begin with, so this is turning out quite well for them.
No, see, there were so many things that were so horribly wrong about Katrina I don't even know how I didn't hear that. I can honestly say that I didn't hear that, and now I feel bad because, you know, she was in a hospital, bitch died.
But you know, she had a long string of a really empty bag of fucks to give, because you might recall when her special son W started a war against the people of Iraq, the innocent people of Iraq. And somebody asked her if she was worried about American casualties. You might recall that she said, she asked why she should waste her beautiful mind thinking about them. How many were dead or where or when? Why should I waste my beautiful mind? Yeah, we have a lot of winners here. Darlene just sent an email. The subject line simply said pearls.
Yeah.
Robert in Australia was right on the bush, but wrong on the Laura. Marty said battle axe Barbara Bush. And in the chat room, it was the Quaker Oats dude, Bob, according to Soapbox Geezer. But the larger point is that right-wing disdain for people who aren't deemed sufficiently wealthy has a long history in this country.
You remember
how George Bush wrote his memoir of his 8 years of the reign of error, and he said the saddest day. Now, this is a guy who was president when 9/11 happened. He said the saddest day for him was when Kanye West said George W. Bush don't like black people.
Wait, what? Not 9/11, not Katrina, not all these young men that were sent off to their women to die in a war that was a lie. So the saddest day for him in 8 years of bullshit
was the day that Kanye West said George Bush don't like black people.
Yeah, I remember that, the only Bush that gives a damn about.
And he tried to, and he spent his presidency trying to live that down. Do you remember when he went to, I forget where it was in Africa, but he went there
And he put on a dashiki and danced?
Yeah, that was painful.
Did he put on the dashiki? I can't remember. Or did he dance in his president in suit?
Remember, but I think he just danced, and I think that was just bad. It was like remember when Donald Trump was at the black church, and was he having a stroke, a seizure, when he was trying to keep up with the music?
Well, it only gets worse. I don't know if you caught the video over the weekend, but he showed up for the prayer breakfast there at the National Cathedral. Which, you know, kind of threw away any of the...
I didn't see the video, but I saw the picture of him looking really pissed off.
Well, not just that, though. No, he tapped out the rhythm to the national anthem on his chest while he was listening to it.
Oh, God. How many more days do we have for this? Because isn't there a countdown clock somewhere?
If there isn't, there should be.
You know, of how many more days, you know, hours, minutes, seconds we have. I was listening to Tom Hartman, which is something I usually don't do because sometimes he gets on my nerves because he seems a little bit full of himself. But apparently, the bookies are taking bets at, I think it's 4-1 odds.
Yeah.
That he's going to be impeached within a year.
Yeah, I wouldn't take that bet. I'm on the side of the bookies.
No. Yeah, because
he's not going to be impeached. There is nothing that will make these thugs in the House impeach him. And then if he is impeached, there's no way to get...
Meet by Pence.
Well, it's not just that. It's that... They don't care.
Okay.
I mean, they don't care if he or issues orders to the military to begin goose stepping. Okay, as long as they get to kill Social Security, kill Medicare, kill Medicaid, take away a woman's right to choose. I mean, they've got a list, Tracy.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
And there is a Trump. And there is a Trump countdown clock. Countdown to the end of Donald Trump's presidency? TrumpTickTock.com.
Wow.
So that's seconds, wow. Minutes, hours. Yeah, 1,457 days, 16 hours, 27 minutes, and 15 seconds at mark.
Well, see, here's Tom Hartman's reasoning, I would be able to get through because when I was listening to it, I was going, and what I can't wait. Hopefully, I get to talk to Bob because I can't wait to hear his take on it. According to Hartman, the only he's of the same vein as you about that Trump could do anything and everything, but. He's saying his thesis or his theory is that if the only thing that Trump can do wrong in this presidency is mess with NAFTA. Was it NAFTA? Yeah, or something.
Yeah, he's gonna renegotiate NAFTA, and. Wow. Now, see, here's the thing. I know that the whole campaign was all about how evil NAFTA is and how terrible it was for American workers, because it was.
It was horrible.
But it was not everything that was said about it was not true.
Of course it wasn't.
And when prices spike, I mean, Americans like getting cheap shit, okay?
Yes, we do.
And we don't care if it breaks. We don't care if we buy an electrical appliance and it burns out in a year, because we'll just go to Walmart and get another one.
Pretty much.
Which is the consumption-based model of capitalism.
Exactly.
And when all that shit at Walmart doubles in price.
Hello. And you still
all them white folks with all that economic anxiety are going, well, how did that Kenyan Muslim you slurper manage to do this when he's already out of office? Damn, I think he's a wizard.
Oh my God. Is there any hope? I didn't get to go to the Women's March. I was working. I had Will that day. But trip this. His parents were in San Francisco. They went to the Women's March in San Francisco, and his sister, who lives in Portland, went to the one in Portland. I got pictures. And, you know, I have a friend, I had a couple of friends that went down here. And like you said, there's this momentum, there's this movement, everything is building up. But where do we go from here? What do we do with this energy? You know, are we finally going to get progressives to run for local and state offices? You know, what?
Well, that was one of the messages Saturday. Go home and run for office. And that's a great idea. That's a great idea. But there's running, and then there's winning.
There's winning.
And the problem,
and if you don't have the financial backing.
Exactly. You'll just get steamrolled by some Trumpansee with right wing backing.
Right. And Citizens United money. Because, you know, corporations are people, and people can, you know, corporations can pump.
And like I said, I mentioned earlier, there were other stories. It was a big deal today in Washington that Texas's nasty ass voter ID law got struck down because the 8-member Supreme Court declined to hear the appeal of the case in which the lower court struck it down. So in Texas's case, it stays struck down.
Ha.
But there are other things as well. You know, this lawsuit was filed today, Tracy, over the emoluments clause.
Yes. So,
And it remains to be seen whether a court of competent jurisdiction will do its job and interpret the Constitution so that Donald Trump can't use the United States as his own little personal jar of emolument.
And emoluments are not something that he puts on Russian hookers before they pee on.
Even if he thinks it is.
Even if he thinks it is. What else? Sean Spicer's little hissy fit.
Yes, we've got a new term. The White House press secretary called another press hissy today. Or maybe, and the second reference will probably be in today's conniption.
Because Jan was, you know, listening to it. And I'm in the kitchen making her lunch, and I'm listening to this shit, and I'm going, the having a hissy fit over the press covering the inauguration, showing just how many people did not show up for the inauguration. I mean, when they did a side by side comparison of Obama's inauguration and Trump's inauguration. You couldn't, from what I understand, because I wasn't either, at Obama's inauguration, you could not move. It was like if you turned and put your hands out, you'd hit somebody. But at Trump's inauguration, you could have done backflips, handstands, cartwheels, the splits, windmills, anything and everything. If there was snow angels, if there had been snow.
Well, but you do have to understand that there really were a lot more people there than the photograph displays, because what it is all those white spaces, those are actually Klansmen in their robes.
Yes.
And they just blend in with the flooring.
How much time did he spend on that? About 10 minutes? 15? And like you said, sweetie, if this is your first press conference, you got how many more, like you did the countdown, you got a whole lot more to go. And if you're already having hissy fits, you're gonna be tired, baby. The way he was lying about the removal of Martin Luther King's bust, and he said, "Well, where's our apology?" And on and on and on.
Yeah, it was right on. It was right on Spicer's Twitter timeline. That's where it was. Followed by Spicer tweeting back, "Apology accepted." Hours before he even bitched about it.
Right. It's like our country that term or the phrase "going to hell in a handbasket." I have never thought about how much what that really meant until now. I mean, like you said about how the LGBTQ, climate change. What else did they take off the White House?
The Spanish language site. The portion of the site that includes an option or information about access for disabled users, that's gone too.
Mm-hmm.
And in his press hissy today, Spicer complained, because everything's a complaint. Well, we're continuing to build out the website. We've got the IT folks working overtime on that now. To do what? It requires a new political philosophy to tell people with visual difficulties what they can do to make the site work for them. Okay? I mean, no.
No. So my question, because I was so apparently Fisher Stevens did a 4-minute documentary about your boy Pruitt.
Yeah.
That's.
He's scary, son of a bitch.
He, who's the scariest of all these people that have been nominated for appointment to Donald Trump's cabinet? And you talk about the lesser of two evils, because that was the comparison between Hillary and Twitler. The lesser of two evils. Now, that was not the case, anybody with any common sense knows. It was not the lesser of two evils between those two. But now this right here that we're going through, DeVos and Spicer, and you got me sick. I got people saying it just like this. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Because I asked my mom's like, "Who is that?" And I told her, and I said, "This motherfucker was so." Well, I didn't say motherfucker to my mom because she would have reached through the phone and choked me out. But this motherfucker was so racist that a Republican Congress said no to him becoming a judge. But yet,
well, to be fair, it was a Democratic majority that stopped stopped Sessions when he was nominated to be a judge.
Right.
But still,
the point
remains. Those facts remain facts, but facts aren't facts anymore because there's always alternative facts.
Like alternative you know, outright.
Yeah.
And all that good stuff. Well, I you know, I don't know. My thing is, I'm just trying to keep my head above water. And, you know, but I'm going to abdicate the phone. So I know there's other people who want to talk.
Yeah.
But I want to hear more about what we can do. And I know you're in a quandary as well as I am, but sometimes you come up with solutions and ideas.
Well, one of the first solutions that's come up is that there's going to be another massive round of protests on tax day, because one of the things that was announced over the weekend as an alternative fact was that the American only reporters want to see his taxes and the American people don't care about it.
But 74% of Americans want to see his tax returns.
No, that's not a real fact. They've got alternative facts that nobody really cares about his taxes. In contravention of that, the talk has at least begun that there should be another one of these come tax day to show him that several millions and millions of people want to see his damn taxes.
Now, is it going to be on the actual, the date of the 15th or the 18th?
I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly not in on the planning. And I don't know if this will capture global attention the way the Women's March did. But I think it's valid, some senator has introduced a piece of legislation that, if passed, which it will not be, because Republicans, would actually require the President of the United States to disclose his taxes.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Oh, by the way, did you get any new subscribers?
One. Yes.
Okay, so that's $5.
We got four. So, we got four more on the $5 subscription bump offer, courtesy of you, Tracy. So four new subscribers get their subscription bumped by $5, and that helps a lot.
No, I have my moment. Well, my dearest Bob, I'm going to let you go because you and I could talk for hours and take over the entire show. But, y'all, you know what? We're going to get through this. We may be bloody.
But it's going to be work.
It's going to be fucking work, man. It's going to be more than just hashtags. It's going to be us showing up and showing out.
And frankly, I didn't go to Charleston this weekend. I'm sorry. I wish I could have. But it was simply not possible.
You can't. I wanted to be at the Women's March this weekend in LA. I couldn't make it because I was working, but I was there in spirit. I listened to the Washington March and watched what I could. So we were there in spirit, and Ashley Judd was. I didn't hear it because, like I said, I watched it sporadically because I was working, but Ashley Judd is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, she is.
You know,
and she may have become the voice of some part of the movement over the course of the last weekend. Tracy, have yourself a lovely evening. We will talk soon,
you
dear.
You too, my love.
All right.
Yes, we do. Good
Bye.
Night.
And thanks to Keith. By the way, we are now only $180 away from our fundraising goal for the evening. Thank you very kindly, Keith. And yes, that offer is on the table. The next four new subscribers get their first month's subscription. They get $5 added to it, courtesy of Tracy. Thank you, Tracy. And the more the merrier, especially as we get toward the latter end of the month. That's when things get really, really thin. Oh, let's see. Lines are open if you want to jump in. That's more than dandy by me. Other things worth considering? Oh, I mentioned briefly the lawsuit filed in regard to Trump profiteering on the backs of the American people. And it's worth noting that it is said, some say, you know, the Fox style book, that the Trump is particularly interested in three white men to nominate to the Supreme Court. Because he gets to do that because, of course, Hillary, the devil! So now we'd rather, so it's better that, it's better that Trump get to do that nominating. Ian Millhiser writing over at Think Progress. He's the justice editor over there. He's got a he reports that the short list includes William Pryor, Diane Sykes, Stephen Colleton, Thomas Hardiman, Raymond Kethledge, Raymond Grunder, and Neil Gorsuch, as well as Michigan Supreme Court Justice Joan Larson, to fill the vacancy created when Tony Scalia went to his long home. Of all the people on that list, the three that are said to be his nearest and dearest include Judge William Pry of Alabama. Pryor, among other things, has attacked Roe v. Wade. I mean, you kind of have to if you're going to be a right-wing judge. And he despises the Miranda decision, Miranda versus Arizona, the one that resulted in cops having to read arrestees their rights because people don't necessarily know what their rights are. He said Miranda was one of the worst examples of judicial activism. And he said that Roe is the worst abomination of constitutional law in all history. I mentioned he's from Alabama, right? Yeah. Because he considers Roe to be a worse decision than, you know, Dred Scott or Plessy. Uh-huh. He has argued in the past that states should remain free to protect the moral standards of their communities through legislation that prohibits homosexual sodomy. Mm-hmm. And here's the best part. Somewhere in his past, and I'm sure they're entirely too well-heeled in the Senate to ever ask him about this, there are those naked pictures he posted of himself on a gay hookup website. Oopsie. Almost makes you hope that he would get nominated so that maybe somebody on that judiciary committee would find some courage and ask him what his photograph was doing on a gay website for hooking up. Mm-hmm. Graham in Australia asks, who's feeding plugs these names? He knows no one. I get that Eric Prince is behind the cabinet, but the only judges Plugs is familiar with are the ones who oversee his bankruptcies and when he sues folks. Who's in his ear regarding SCOTUS? The Heritage Foundation and the Federalist Society. That's who. By the way, people tend to forget. He's got a sister who is actually a pro-choice member of the U.S. Court of Appeals. She was some sort of federal judge. Of Ashley becoming a voice of the movement. Robert, somewhere near Morgantown, says, they'll Dixie chick her. Watch and see. They already have her sister against her. But her sister's been taking positions against her for a while. If I recall correctly, wine owner didn't take too kindly when she came out against mountaintop removal. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, let me find it here. Where'd you go? Oh, yeah. James wrote in, subject line, Ashley's naked picture. Yeah, Bob, that ain't really why they put it up. The main thing about her that bothers them is knowing that she wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole. Well, there's probably some truth in that. From Australia, Robert writes, it's still the school holidays here in Australia till next week, so all the films target the teen audience and younger. And even though many films never get a cinema release in Australia, Hidden Figures starts February 16th. I've already seen it, and it's well worth seeing for those who haven't. The blatant and open racism of it is uncomfortable to watch. I found myself squirming in my seat while watching it. I do hope some of the schools here take the older students to see it. I enjoyed seeing that the only person who couldn't operate the IBM was... I did enjoy seeing that the only people who could operate the IBM were women. It made me smile. I worked on a machine like that in my early work life. I could operate it, but understand it, I never even got close. My only complaint about the film was the inside of John Glenn's capsule. It just looked wrong. Thank you, Robert. So let's run over and check in. And just a reminder, we got $180 in fundraising to go. It'd be nice not to start the week in a hole. It'd be great if 18 folks would send $10, but or any combination thereof. But yeah, let's run over and talk to Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Oh, Todd.
Hey, Bob.
What are you doing?
How are you doing tonight?
You know, I don't know if there's going to be a good answer for that for the next couple of years. You know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean. Speaking of that, did you have what a lot of people were afflicted with on Friday, like most of the weekend, until the women's march and rally? Just a sick, nasty feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it's real.
A lot of people had that.
I was plumb shook up when I finally decided to bite the bullet and watch the actual swearing in part of the inaugural coverage. There was nothing could make me watch all the happy talk, the Joe and Mika stuff, and the various blathering dunderheads. No. But I did. I tuned in. I tuned in for that part of the where he stood up, and I guess it's because it was raining that Lincoln's Bible didn't catch fire.
I think that many people were waiting for him to put his hand on that Bible just to see if something would happen.
I think a lot of people were kind of hoping that. I bet even the atheists were kind of sitting there going, you know, I wouldn't mind if my atheism was shattered all to shit if it was just a big old goddamn lightning bolt that just went, and I'm a believer.
It's amazing. But, you know, I'm glad I was able to listen to your filibuster today because I didn't hear the Ashley Judd thing. She was channeling. She was just on fire.
Yeah. Oh, she. Wow. That was real. And you know, my little tuned in ears heard one very, very pissed off hillbilly woman.
Well, I I didn't know that she was like that. She covered all the bases. I mean, that was moving. That the little bit I heard, I was like, wow, that's really something. But I'm so proud of the people who turned out for that demonstration that was worldwide on Saturday, because you know, we have to have hope somewhere, and this is all we have left is protest now at this point.
Well, there's protest and there's the courts. And
oh yeah,
and right. And who knows, but the courts are a mixed bag because there are so goddamn many right wing judges. Because Democrats let Republicans put Republican judges in place, but Republicans do not let Democrats put, you know, tepid little meek mild centrists on the bench.
I agree. See, we dropped the ball when we had the chance to get the lower level federal judges in and all the way up, because they, you know, usually come from within the ranks. And we have all these, it was some astronomical number when the past president, Obama, left. It was a whole lot of federal judgeships that were not filled. Am I speaking out of turn here?
No, you're right.
You know, and it makes a difference, because usually, you draw people in the judiciary who are coming, who have already been vetted, basically. They've proven what they're about. So that's a big problem. But, yeah. But anyway, hopefully it's a monument thing. I mean, it looks cut and dry to me. I don't see how. And this.
Well, sadly, Todd, it's not.
Well.
Because, among other things, the whole lawsuit. There are elements to lawsuits in the federal courts, and one of those is standing. And you have to have standing to bring a suit.
But those guys have standing.
Their assertion of standing is not clear cut. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or whatever it is, CREW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their standing is not clear cut. Their argument is that they have been harmed because of the resources they have had to devote to pursuing the issue. This is in line with a standing argument from the 70s that was approved by the courts, that said that a group that advocated for non-discrimination and non-segregation, well, they said they had to expend significant resources, limited resources, in order to do the investigation, bring the suit about of issues under, I think, the Fair Housing Act.
Mm-hmm.
And the court said, yeah, we can deal with that. That'll do. It is not clear, however, that standing argument, because it's been significantly narrowed over the decades. It's not clear that standing argument will hold water in this case, which is why, I mean, this is just the first stream across his bow, as it were. They're still looking for, say, owners of restaurants and hotels who would be willing to be plaintiffs in a case challenging Trump because their business has been harmed by all the governments that feel compelled now to do business with Trump's properties so as to curry favor with him.
Well, see, that's starting to sound like a class action lawsuit now.
It's not a class action. You don't have enough plaintiffs there to form a class, I don't think.
But maybe that's what it's going to take, because I understand what you're saying. It's hard. It's going to be, because it's so capricious how the federal courts will determine what they have to determine to.
Well, and there's another, and even if you get past the standing hurdle, there's another one that has to be jumped, and that is ripeness and mootness. Now, see, the Trump people are already trying to get out in front of this because they announced today, well, he's signed away any financial interest he had in a thousand different corporations, and they're all being run by his son now.
Yeah, but that's bullshit. That's what I'm saying. That means nothing. He could get hit by a truck, and then, of course, it goes straight to his children. So that means nothing. I mean, even a bricklayer understands that. That's fucking nothing. It means nothing. What the fuck does that mean? That means nothing.
And then there's the question, going back to when they had that bullshit press conference where they brought the fake file folders full of blank paper.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't. Don't get near that. No, you can't look too hard. No, don't look at that.
No, those are confidential. Those are confidential blank pieces of paper. but the thing is, they make the argument that renting out a hotel room is not the same as a gift or an emolument. It's not like they're giving him something. He's just, you know, his business just happens to be in the business of renting hotel rooms. So
that certainly wasn't
contemplated by the framers in coming up with the emoluments clause. There's only one problem with that, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
That's a living constitution argument. That's not an original intent argument, because back in 1787, you didn't have 1,000-room hotels. Hell, you didn't have a Washington, D.C. now, did you?
A bunch of swamps.
So
there's a whole lot of muck.
So they'll have to hypocrite themselves real, real good in order to pull that off.
But wait a minute. Now, I do remember this. I try to remember things. I have a pretty good memory sometimes. And remember, a lot of people around the world, a lot of nations, they do business differently than we do. They have no, you know, corruption, nepotism. That's just the way they do business.
Yeah, right. That's part. It's baked in.
It's baked in. And they did it out in the open, because it was some group from Asia, and they went straight, and a group from the continent, maybe Nigeria, I don't know, somewhere in Africa. Maybe that's wrong, but I know about the Asian.
Look at the
beeline to the hotel, because they were like, oh no, we have to do. They even said it.
Look at the Kuwaitis. They canceled a contract with one hotel and signed up with the Trump pile of bricks in the old post office building. Lickety split.
Exactly. See, that's what I call that. That's prima facie. That's evidence. That's evidence.
And that's the kind of evidence you need going forward. And see, countries like Kuwait. And where government is predicated upon patronage,
right?
They see nothing wrong with that.
No, that's.
I mean, I remember, and this is maybe it's petty or it's small potatoes, but there was a time when some prince, whatever from over there, kinglet, I don't know, was being treated at the Cleveland Clinic. And when the stay was over, all the women got expensive handbags, and all the men, the nurses, the CNAs, the maintenance staff, the janitorial staff, the doctors, the women got, you know, I don't know, Louis Vuitton purses, and the guys got, all the men got Rolexes. Because, you know, you just do that in that culture.
Otherwise, you don't get seen next time, or it's fast,
It's considered courtesy and patronage. You know, you throw trinkets to the little people, even if trinkets happen to be $5,000 handbags and $5,000 watches.
Well, there's a whole lot of backslapping and patronage and envelope passing. I mean, these folks, they couldn't wait. They, you know, we've talked about this before, but they couldn't wait. The grift started before he was even elected, really. You know, I don't understand these folks who really are in this corner so much. I just don't get it. I'm like, what do you give them a chance? What chance? What chance? Look at these people he's appointed.
Well, that was the heart and soul of what Sean Spicer was pissing and moaning about today. Oh, you know, when you guys just keep proving that everything we say is a fucking lie, well, you know, it's demoralizing for us.
Well, he's a demoralizing piece of shit. What the fuck do you expect?
Yeah, but he's a special snowflake.
Man, I'm so sick of this shit. And these assholes who, you know, all this and I'm telling you, these people keep calling in. Oh, the negative press. Stop. They're just beating him up in the press. They keep calling him a criminal. Well, he keeps stealing cars. He's a fucking criminal.
Well, one of the things that maybe it's wrong for me to say that it bugged me, but it didn't help any. You know, I appreciated the fact that Joke Toad pushed back against Kellyanne Conway yesterday on Meet the Prestitutes.
Wait a minute, her new name is Dried Up Crackhole. Hit the street.
I thought her new name was Captain Picard in drag.
That's a side job.
Well, I mean, I just see her as fascism Barbie, but that's me.
I know. I'm sorry. And that's
but she
bad.
Tried. She ran out that alternative facts line, and Chuck Todd was right on top of it, and he said, "Alternative facts aren't facts." And I kind of stepped back, and I said, "Some bitch."
Did you throw that? Remember those bricks they used to sell back in the day that you could throw at the TV?
Oh, the rubber. Yeah, remember Richard Pryor talking about throwing a rubber brick at Jim Brown?
Yeah,
Rich, that's real funny. Rubber brick throwing, motherfucker. Yeah. We used to talk about maybe getting some horn rubber bricks.
I think that's a good idea.
To just, you know, throw, you know, printed with the horn on them, the horn logo and stuff. But no, when he said, you know, alternative facts aren't facts, I was like, well, yeah, hot damn. Where the hell were you a year ago?
Right, right. Right.
Oh, wait, right. Back then you thought having Trump on was great for your ratings. I'm sorry, Chuck. Back then you thought you were in the ratings business and not the news business. All reforms don't have to be gigantic reforms.
I wish you could do a whole show just on that exchange, because I was pissed the fuck off with that shit. This bitch is going to get on goddamn fucking national TV and just say some shit like it's true, like it's real, alternative fact. You know, I hate to cut you off, but I got to get this off my chest right now.
There you go, man.
I blame the fucking media right now. They got us in this hole, and now they're continuing. The Chuck Todd tried a little bit. However, why is it only the quote-unquote fringe that has to bring things to light?
Well, the New York Times, which we now know, had the dossier months in advance of the election.
Yeah, see. I'm just talking about...
Wait, hold on. This is important.
Okay.
They had the dossier, and what's more, they said they found no red flags in it, and still they sat on it, still they suppressed it. Well, now, all of a sudden, today we get a headline from the New York Times referring to Sean Spicer and Trump, and they, in the headline, Todd, they used the word falsehoods, which is a two-syllable form of lies.
Lie.
They called him a liar in, you know, now.
Wait, it's a little bit too fucking late. We're both talking about the same thing. I'm just going to come to what I see the end of this, and it's disgusting. People have been so fucking dumbed down now. I mean, what more do you need to be hit over the head with? This is exactly how Hitler operated. Number one,
he already has claimed he might at any point. And that crack-o, the dried up crack-o, even said, "Well, I don't know. I'm going to have to reevaluate our relationship." You know, so you crack-o bitch, you're saying that on the heels of your boss saying he might just throw the press corps out of the White House. So basically, you want to reform. You're just going to have all propaganda that comes out of your side. And anything that doesn't agree with what you want to say is a lie. That's Hitler's regime, okay? That's that Goebbels Hitler shit. And if you don't understand that, you don't fucking know history. It's pretty fucking simple. It's not that fucking complicated. So where's the media? These motherfuckers went to school. You learn that shit in fucking, you start learning that shit in goddamn ninth grade. Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
What the fuck is wrong with these people then? Then he's got his own security force.
No, this is
wait a minute.
The one thing you don't do in ninth grade, Todd, is read Machiavelli. And this is Machiavelli. The ends justify the means. Whatever they do will become self-justifying as long as they can do what it is they set out to accomplish, whether it's taking health care away from 18 million people next year or whether it's selling the government out parcels at a time to the Russians. The ends justify the means, which mean, in turn, that they will have no compunction against lying, that it will be de rigueur.
Course of the day. Now, I got one question for you, though. One question. Is our country, is it growing in numbers? Is our population growing or shrinking?
Growing.
Okay, it's growing. So why in the world, as slow as our government works now, why would you want to put a freeze on federal workers?
Because limited small federal government. It's an article of faith. It doesn't have to be reflected in reality because it is, in fact, Todd, an article of faith.
Well, and then you want to build up the military. Like, we need more of that.
Oh, because there was that passage in the inaugural address about our beaten and bedraggled military. Well, who broke the military? That wasn't Barack Obama. That was dim leaders sending pimply-faced National Guardsmen in unarmored Hummers over to face a country that was laden with IEDs. That's who that was. It's just like the economic anxiety, Todd. That wasn't Obama. That was 8 years of economic anxiety under W. That they owned that the poor white folks only began to notice when that one got into their White House. But you mentioned something a minute ago, and I want to get this out there just as an idea. Because every now and then we come up with ideas, and, you know, Tracy mentioned the question, you know, how do we do more? How do we make this work? A few minutes ago, I said Chuck Todd thought he was in the ratings business and not the news business. Well, the fact of the matter is, ratings affect news. And because ratings affect news, ratings affect the amount of money that news programs can charge to people who want to advertise on them.
Okay.
So here's and I think this is kind of elegant, really. And it goes back to experiences that I had in radio in years back. Back when Arbitron was still a thing, Arbitron didn't provide, at least this was always what the program directors and the honchos and shit told me, they didn't rate or provide listenership numbers for non-commercial stations. Or, for that matter, on commercial stations, they didn't offer ratings for paid programming. You know, like when Pastor Whackbottom from the First United Apostolic Herpetological Park and Gospel Emporium buys an hour on Sunday from WFUK. Well, he never gets any ratings because it's bought programming, so therefore Arbitron treated that as not valid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's an idea, at least with regard to television, because for all intents and purposes, there's really no radio news anymore,
mm-hmm.
except for NPR. And they'll be gone in another couple of years once they get done killing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Oh, God, bring that up. Don't bring that up.
What if Nielsen stopped offering ratings of news programs? What if?
Whoa.
Because then that would take the market dynamic and the advertising dynamic out of the calculation. And you'd have to base ad rates on the actual cost of doing business instead of how much you wanted to charge because of how many people were watching you.
That would level the field, wouldn't it, in terms of who's presenting what?
It kind of seems that way. Now, I'm sure I'll get an email saying, no, Bob, that could never possibly work.
I don't know. Look, pressure works. That's a good idea, Bob. Pressure. Look, we got these folks to back down from the idea that they were not going to police themselves, the Congress. The ethics board. That's not the right term for it, but you know what I mean. And that's important because, you know, now they're talking about the debate again about free stream internet. I mean, the neutral net, you know, keeping the net neutral because the old guy's out. Wheeler's out. I think his name is Wheeler. So that's a very prescient argument and debate you're bringing up, right? Because we got to take the money. Obviously, the money has taken over because. Just like, you know, they waited too late to do a lot of things. They waited too late to use the F word when it was obvious to a lot of folks like us that the guy was a fascist. And A mentally ill fascist. That is what we have. Now look, this Joker is insane. We have an actual insane fascist that's running the country, you know. And I liked what you said before when the black guy was writing executive orders when it was, you know, probably necessary in some instances, in many instances.
Oh, it was tyranny. He was a Muslim dictator.
You know, but now this guy is just tearing up. I mean, literally, people are going to start, you know, we need to be moving forward with the health care.
Todd, he's ICP. Insane clown president.
Oh, how about that? I like that. Yeah.
How much longer is it going to be before he comes out to the podium and sprays the press corps down with a bottle of fucking Faygo?
It won't last. He has too many enemies. He's boxed in. See, he got himself in too deep now. He got himself in too deep. But then we're still not going to be okay because then we got to deal with Ryan and Pence and the Congress because Mitch McConnell's smelling his piss now and he's like, oh, I can't wait, you know. I'm the only thing I feel invigorated from the mostly women's march and it was guys out there also and they were telling the truth. And I mean, that's a hell of a lot of people. And for those motherfuckers to get up there and lie, I mean, how you going to lie? Everybody saw what happened. You are straight up Hitler, man. What the fuck is wrong with you? I don't mean you. You know what I mean.
No, I get it.
All right. Look, everybody contribute to Bob Kincaid at the Horn webpage through PayPal because you can't trust the snail mail now, because now we're not having any more employees being hired. So you can forget about your mail being delivered on time.
Yeah, eventually every government department the Republicans don't like will be reduced to one little old blue-haired lady.
And that's that.
And then they'll talk about how, see, we've brought you small government.
No. And see, this is old school shit. You know, you starve the finances, right? You do that shit behind closed doors. You start and then say, oh, you're not responding to customer demand. Your productivity rates are low. You just can't keep up. What's going on here? Oh, this is inefficient. We have to do away with this. Right, because you starved it. You know, you need people to, I mean, look, you try to call the IRS, you have to be on, you're on hold for like fucking, what, half hour, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
So, you know, and then toll roads, I don't know, man, people, I don't know how many people live in the New York City area that listen to your program, but you can't travel out your neighborhood in a car unless you got some money in your pocket. Those bridges, man, you got to have like $50, $100 in your pocket just to fucking go around, just to be where you got to be. Not even spending any money. That's just tolls.
Hey, it cost me 80 cents to go to Beckley and back every time I go.
See, that's 80 cents, but that's a dollar. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, and because it's just one crummy little toll booth. But here's it, now here was the evil genius of it. They made it 40 cents instead of 50 because they know there's a bunch of people out there. Oh, God damn it, I don't have a nickel and a dime. Here, throw 50 cents in.
He could give you a dollar. Sorry.
So instead of getting 80 cents, they get a buck.
Sorry, Bob. Yeah. That's the evil.
Well, I mean, if you want to really slow down and go through the booth with the human being with it, they'll give you back your dime in change. But most people, screw it. Throw in two quarters.
Did they have the basket thing?
Oh, yeah. And I damn sure, I sit there until that little green light goes on and it says thank you.
You're going to get something out of it, right?
Damn right. It's a transaction. It's transactional, just like going to the strip joint.
Oh, and I have one more. Oh, transactional going. Right. How about that? I have one more question. Now, it seems to me that there was a president not that long ago that was trying to get some infrastructure going, a highway bill.
Yeah, but it might have, those might have been Muslim highway projects.
That was it. My bad. Oh, that's right.
I mean, those very well might have been Sharia bridges.
Damn right. I forgot. That's right. They had the prayer rugs that you had to rent and you had to pray before you got on the bridge. And it was just, they just figured it wasn't feasible. I forgot. Okay. Well, thanks, Bob.
All right, Todd, you have a good evening and, put something, let me know next time you put something awesome on the, hey, how'd the thighs work out, man?
Oh, I just finished one. Yes, absolutely. I'm telling you, these are the natural chicken, the ones that don't have the hormones in it. These nice thighs, you marinate them, or dry rub or marinate, different types. Grill them. It's been raining here for days, but just finished having one on a nice Kaiser roll. So grilled thigh with two slices of bacon. I love the bacon. And Swiss cheese melted on top on a Kaiser roll with light blue cheese on both sides. Delicious.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yep. And spring ain't even here.
Spring, oh yeah, I've got the wood. Oh man, well, I do have the wood in many ways, but I've got the good pecan wood.
Wait a minute, time out. First cowbell of the evening.
Hey man, when you're hung, you got to brag, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
but yeah,
second cowbell of the evening.
No, but seriously, I have not had this much good cooking. You know, grill whatever, man. It's amazing. So when it finally stops raining, it's all properly stored and whatnot. So it's going to be great when the rain.
So is it nice and soggy down there?
Oh, it's nice and it's super saturated. Yes.
Yeah. Everywhere you step up here, it squishes. It's like hillbilly. Yeah. It's like some sort of hillbilly Vietnam.
Well, Bob, you're doing a great job, and I hope you get some more subscribers tonight.
Well, thank you very kindly, Todd. I appreciate it very much, and always enjoy the conversation. Chime in anytime.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Todd in South Carolina, Stan. And, yes, thank you very kindly to Steve and Cletus, who went out and dug into her bone stash. That took us down to 170. And then Angel in California, thank you very kindly for taking us down to 155. Thank you very much indeed. $155 to go on the evening, and that is a huge help. So we've got that going on. Toll booths, according to Robert in Australia, toll booths are mostly gone here in Sydney, replaced with electronic trackers and photographing of your number plate if you don't pay, followed by a bill in the post. I always go the toll-free way. And that's, I can do that going into Beckley, but it, you know, the 80 cents, depending on which direction you're going in, cuts off a little bit of time. Couple of notes. Subject line, White Bleak House, from Steve, a member of the Fraternity of Steve. Trump's advisor, Sherry A. Dillon, is a partner in the law firm of Morgan, Lewis & Bockius, LLP. She specializes in federal tax law controversies, according to the firm's own website. In other words, she covers for big cheese tax dodgers seeking a clean exit when the IRS manages to get a loose tooth in. Regarding emoluments et al., Natalie Gwargis, a firm spokeswoman, said, "We do not comment on our clients or the work we do for them." See? He's a client, not also the U.S. president. And they're helping him deal with ethics issues, not making damn sure he dodges the tax man, the Constitution, or any other pesky pieces of fucking worthless parchment that get in the way of his global business hustle. Because the law is the law, except when the alternative facts dictate it isn't. Because facts are consumer goods, like toothpaste and breakfast cereal. I think we're clear on this by now. Note, Congress, that august body of high-minded ethicists, has the option to otherwise permit, authorize an emolument, or gift, or compensation, or contribution, or note of indebtedness, or just about anything else I might care to construct off the cuff. I'm not aware that there is a limit on rubber stamping emoluments waivers. Imagine one of T's family members will get the rubber stamp if and when needed. Also, Ms. Dillon has also stated that profits from any proceeds related to foreign governments and the booking of T's hotels would be donated to the U.S. Treasury. I'm not certain that the U.S. Treasury is in a position to accept such donations, even if they could stoop to such a thing. But the Mobius loop of interminable legal wrangling to come out of such an arrangement is enough to make any head explode, though it employ legions of barristers for the next 1,000 bleak years. Just a few alternative facts for your consideration. P.S. Moratorium on Orwellian is advisable. Newspeak or related notions are antique at this stage of technical refinement. Yeah, I've noticed there's a whole bunch of words out there that need retired for a while, just because they've had all the meaning sucked out of them. I take your nomination to heart, Steve, as regards the word Orwellian, and would also move to include in that list the word pivot. Like presidents have a pivot foot, like in basketball. I suggest we retire pivot just put pivot on the bench for a little while. And in terms of hissy having, it's probably best to retire neoliberal for a bit, because that's one of those words, and it's kind of like what I was saying about using the word fascist earlier. Well, Ferg doesn't like ketchup, so when we go through the drive-thru, he says, make my hamburger without ketchup. And invariably, it seems, that based on the law of nature enunciated by Joe Pesci, they fuck you at the drive-thru, they fuck you at the drive-thru, and Ferg's hamburger has ketchup on it. Yes, I realize he's the one human being in the entire country that doesn't want ketchup on a hamburger, but, have it your way. So when he unwraps it and the ketchup's there, and we've already driven away from the drive-through window, he does not stick his head out the window and scream, "Fascists!" No. But, you know, that word neoliberal used to mean something. Now it's something you yell at the kid at the drive-thru who put ketchup on your burger that you didn't want ketchup on. Neoliberal! Hillary! God! And the sooner we get over that silly shit, the better off we'll be, because then we will be able to continue to put pressure on this really, no kidding, fascist administration. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, people did have a conniption because that poem by that Ashley Judd recited contained the word Hillary. And it occasioned some fulminating. Prior to the march, there was a concerted campaign that went by the hashtag Add Her Name to try to co-opt this profound nationwide movement into a thing about Hillary. When that would have, I'm not going to question the goodwill of the people who started that, but it would have shattered the effort into a million tiny pieces. And I give credit to Hillary Clinton for not parachuting in and trying to make it about her. At some part in the process, she tweeted out that it was deeply inspiring to see so many people come together to stand up for women's rights, which was an entirely appropriate response. If we're going to have any success, we're going to have to figure out a way to get past the polarization. The Hilarians are going to have to stop hooting about, you know, we was robbed, even if we were. And the other side is going to have to stop screaming DNC. And, you know, this is not like asking anybody to give up a limb. This is asking people to understand the nature of the threat we face. There was a World War II remark made earlier in the chat room at the beginning of the program. And the fact of the matter is, in the Second World War, we did ally ourselves with the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union was no less a brutal dictatorship during the Second World War than it was before, or it was after. But in moments of great crisis, sometimes you have to put ideological differences aside and focus. Now, I realize that there's a whole lot of political money being bet on the Trump voters wising up and realizing they've been had. My personal opinion of that is that is
That's a real bad bet. Because you're asking people who didn't have that much in the way of brain power in the first place to suddenly have the light shine on them on the road to Damascus and everything become clear. You're asking them to sit under the bow tree and wait for enlightenment. And it's going to be a long wait. Because just like that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions with Hood campaign video whose audio I played a little bit ago, they're going to remain in permanent campaign mode, and they have proven that they have no compulsion against lying whatsoever. So if change or even separate from that, if this country is to be drawn back from fascism, people on our side are going to have to put some differences aside, regardless of whether we think they be significant or petty. Adding another word to the list, Michael in Madison says, can we retire optics too? Yeah, that one probably needs to go as well. And I understand, I was actually going to mention this, but Darlene beat me to it. Darlene said, not pleased to see Debbie Wasserman Schultz's mug up there on that stage Saturday. She still wants to be a player. And it didn't do me any good either. Some folks just need to go away. Stop it. Because there is no way. There's no way that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was going to do anything good for that effort. For whatever number of people who were pleased to see her there, I would dare say there were twice as many who were looking at her and just going, oh, go home. Learning curves, you know? So I'm in agreement with you, Darlene. Subject line, Whitey's Jolly Cone, coming from James. Whitey was the crusty old guy who flipped the burgers and made damn sure your order was right when I was growing up in West Sacramento, California. I got the California burger, mustard, mayo, and trimmings, no ketchup. Is that a Ferg burger? It is a burger Ferg would not have a problem with, James. And I've kind of come, I don't know if you'd say come around. I was always kind of there. I didn't know that was a California burger. I've always, mustard, mayo, pickles, you know, then the lettuce, tomato, onion, trimmings. But I've never been a fan. And Ferg just kind of stood up for peace, truth, justice, and harmony, and said, you know, I don't like ketchup. Although he points to the fact that he probably mainlined a few too many ketchup packages in the lunchroom in elementary school, and it just did him in. It would not be the first time, because back when I was a little kid, those little packets, I refer to those little packets of ketchup as drinking ketchup. So, somehow or another, we always manage to have at least one of these conversations, don't we? And frankly, I think they're good for our collective mental health. So it is Moran Monday. And if we got to have at least one story that is absolutely worthy of the Calliope music and the Carnival Barker and all of that. This guy definitely contributed to the concept of being up to your armpits in morons. I'm talking about Republican State Senator Bill Kintner of Papillion, Nebraska. And yes, it's P-A-P-I-L-L-I-O-N. We ain't getting all Frenchy out in Nebraska. No, that ain't Papillon, that's Papillion. That's Papillion, Nebraska. And the people of Papillion, Nebraska, like Bill Kintner so much that they made him a member of the Nebraska State Senate. And part of the reason they done it is because he's got him some conservative family values. And he don't like no feminazis. So he was looking at his Twitter feed and he saw a tweet from Larry Elder. And the tweet from Larry Elder showed a photograph of three women at the Women's March protesting Donald Trump, and particularly protesting his comments about grabbing women. And by way of making fun of them, said, "Ladies, I think you're safe." In other words, suggesting that they were not sufficiently attractive to merit him, Larry Elder, thinking that they would be worth grabbing by their genitals. And so, lo and behold, Republican Family Values State Senator Bill Kintner of Papillion retweeted Larry Elder's tweet. He didn't really want to talk to reporters about it either, you know, Lugan Press and all that. But when he did finally get to the safety of his office where he could hide behind his door, they issued a statement saying, "By retweeting a message, I was not implying support for putting women in fear of their personal safety. I took down the retweet as soon as I became aware that it was being misconstrued." God damn it! If it wasn't for all that misconstruing, maybe a feller could have fun making fun of women who don't want to be grabbed by the vagina. God damn misconstruing liberal media! Yeah. By mid-morning today, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, family values, Republican, Senator Bill Kintner of Papillion, Nebraska, had done deactivated his Twitter account. But he issued a Parthian shot on the way out, responding to someone who had criticized him by saying, "Right out of the liberal playbook, take a joke and claim victimhood." Yeah. He's one of those people that good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Republicans just love because he ain't politically correct. He says what he thinks and don't give a damn what anybody else thinks because he's just saying things that other people ain't got the courage to say. He's like Trump that way. He's described by the Associated Press as having a long history of inflammatory comments. Because the Republicans are afraid. He's one of their strongest voices.
hint. If one of your strongest voices is a nasty-ass misogynist, maybe you need to find another strong voice. Because, see, you can be a strong voice for conservative policies without being a misogynist dickhead. Yeah.
So, I'm glad to be able to have a genuine, bona fide, no kidding, real live Moran for Moran Monday. We are going to be busy. More than a little bit. Oh, and just because, and just to wrap up the program with a little bit more silliness. And, you know, hopefully knock down a little bit more of that $155. Or maybe all of it. Sorry. It is what it is. A little audio from this morning from the Department of Pots Calling Kettles Black. Let's check in with Joe. Oh, wait a minute. Spring allergy season's coming early. Cliff Soudis, Scarborough. And the woman Charlie Pierce refers to as the meat puppet, Mika Brzezinski, whose job is apparently to play the role of abused 50s housewife to Scarborough's Ward Cleaver with a fifth of martinis in him. Here we go. Oh, wrong button.
The show has begun really badly. Whoever didn't write or should have written or should have edited that speech should go today. Out. Goodbye. Done. And whoever did not coordinate the CIA event correctly should go today.
Should be fired.
Out.
And by the way,
done.
Whoever,
it's showtime
also,
and nobody can afford this.
Whoever was encouraging him, goading him to keep fighting about the size of the crowds, as the New York Times
or
reports,
whoever didn't back
should
down,
should be fired today for the sake of America. It is showtime. He likes boxing. He had a lot of boxing matches at his events. Guess what? The bell just rang. The bell just rang for the first corner, first round, and Eddie, his corner man, were looking out into the crowd and completely overmatched by history.
You know, I might be inclined to say, yeah, sure, yeah, they got that one. Yeah, those people should be fired. But as usual, it becomes apparent that Joe and Mika have no idea what they're talking about. Because that was not a function of speech writing. And I don't know how these two don't know this. That had nothing to do with speech writing or organizing the trip to the CIA. That was all Trump. There was a cheering section there because Trump wanted a cheering section. There was a diatribe against the media because he wanted to do a diatribe against the media. It wasn't his handlers. That was, if you want to fire the guy who's responsible for all of that, well, gang, Joe, Mika, you might want to encourage the Congress to impeach the president, because the president was behind all that. But beyond any of that, there's the simple fact that they have no room to complain. They don't even have room to turn around, because they're collaborators. They helped make this possible. Isn't it that simple? Where we are now doesn't happen without Joe and Mika. It doesn't happen without softball questions from Joke Toad. It doesn't happen without various and sundry people from CNN sticking their noses as so far up Trump's fundament that when he yawns, you could see their smiling faces in the back of his throat. And then in the Oval Office, there was the air kiss. Have you seen the air kiss? It's real precious. At a reception for the swearing-in of cabinet members and high government functionaries, before calling him to him, Donald Trump blew an air kiss to James Comey. If you go searching for it, you won't have to look very far. It's right there. He puckers up that little anus mouth of his and to James Comey 20 feet away. It was real. It was a matter of rubbing the nation's nose in it. Well, hang on tight, y'all. We'll keep the doors open here at this little home of some portion of the resistance, where we talk about what it means to be the resistance and how to resist. And we search for individual solutions or just individual handholds for our own sanity for the next few years. Keep going as long as we can. I hope maybe we'll add to the number of people participating in that discussion. Because we never charge for anything. And it's all there for anyone who wants it. Note coming in here toward the end from Michael in Madison. I disagree. I humbly disagree, Bob. Conservative policies are, by their very nature, misogynistic and dickheaded. Well, I think I'm going to join you, Michael, in disagreeing with myself. Because I think you're right. So, time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep this little effort going. And it's not as little as it seems. But thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky. Thank you to John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thanks to each and every one of you who spend some portion of your precious finite time engaging in this years-long conversation. Thank you. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.